Hi people and hello my Chili Con Carne crew, it's Chili here from Live Listen Erased. And as promised, here is the episode, the first episode of many, regarding the Rolling Stones albums, all of them on a tier list. And in these episodes, we plan to really dissect them and put them all into separate episodes because, you know, there's a lot of stuff to cover. So I have a special guest, Wazza, joining me. And this very first episode, we're going to be discussing, the beginnings of the Rolling Stones. We're talking about their 1964 records, two albums. On the first episode, and we're going to be doing that for the first couple of episodes until eventually we move into, I think, about 1968, where every single episode or album after is going to be for one dedicated episode. So I hope that you enjoyed the following video. I am sorry, there was a few recording problems, and for some reason it has been separated into a few separate sections, so we might have a few sections missing, but I've edited it as much as I can. Anyway, enjoy the video.
Wazza, first of all, thank you for joining us in regards to this episode. It's good to have you on board and joining us again.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's always and of course, any chance to talk about the Rolling Stones is a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So any excuse to talk about it. I hope you got a beer ready, because I do, and I'm just going to be talking about, we're going to ran over these like ones. Of course, as I said, this first episode, the reason we're going to make it four in one episode is simply because, I guess for time constraints, we're going to kind of brush over their very first era and go over it very quickly.
Well, they're short albums as well.
They are. Yeah, they're very short. Yeah, especially when it comes to later on in their career. So, yeah, when it comes to it, I guess let's go through a little bit of what we're going to be doing as well for these episodes. So what we plan to do, of course, we're doing our introduction as we are talking about now. We're going to rate the album cover, which is going to be pretty easy for these first few albums. We're going to give a brief history in regards to this one. Stories and song facts, probably brief over it for this episode, but, you know, that'll be in the next one. Some stories and song facts, hits from the album, and of course our favourite songs from this, and the worst tracks, or least favourite probably would be the right word. And we're going to rate it on the tier list as well. That's probably the most important thing that we have to mention as to why we are doing this. So yes, these are going to be on a tier list. Tier list hopefully comes on screen now so you know what we're going to go up against here. Album cover, Wazza, for the first one, nothing too fancy.
Well, it's interesting. In those days, bands were still wearing jackets and suits and ties. As they are.
Yeah.
I think the covers of the first four albums looks to me like they probably shot in two photo shoots.
Yeah.
Okay, lads, let's go out the stairs now. We'll do one there. Let's do one facing west. Let's do one facing east.
Yep.
Okay, Brian, you take your jacket off for this shot. Mick, you take your jacket off for this shot. Because if you look at the first album, you know, it's got the four of them and they kind of look, they're facing to their left, and then glancing over their shoulder at the camera. Brian Jones is without a jacket on. The rest of them are wearing jackets. It looks to me like they're wearing suits. I mean, people like Charlie Watts was always a very snappy dresser anyway.
Yeah.
And, they look pretty much like a Herman's Hermits or a lot of other bands of those of that particular...
They were going for that image.
...time. But they had a snarly look on their face, you know, like a kind of rebellious attempt. You know, it's not a big smile or anything. It's just, to me, that front cover looks like they're facing a judge and someone's called them to the side. You're going to go, what? The barrister's saying to them, don't say that, huh?
I suppose as far as album covers go, with the band on it, it's not the worst one.
That's right.
It's nothing fancy though. It's just them on an album cover.
Shot.
Yeah, it's just here's the photo shot. Here's the model shot. Okay, yep. Send that out to the US releases as well. They can use photo section 6B. Yep, they can do that one. You know, we've got, you know, section 3A for the UK release. You know, and actually interesting you note that because that does come up a bit later on as well. But yeah, look, album cover. It's fine for what it is. It's
picture of the band. They want to get their faces out there, and I guess you want them to be known.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess in regards to addressing the history before we go into the album a bit too much, but 1964 England, there was a bit of a change when it came to the music scene, especially because obviously you had Beatlemania around about this time. You had other bands that were just starting to emerge as well, like The Who. Eric Clapton.
Cream.
Cream.
Yardbirds.
Yeah, he was in the Yardbirds at this time. And just that whole scene is starting to emerge and really take shape. And here are the Rolling Stones coming on scene. And I remember because, like, you know, I think Lemmy said it interestingly enough. He goes that the band from Liverpool was, of course, the rough and tough lads that were the Beatles. And then the artsy boys were the Rolling Stones.
And they were trying to play rough and tough. The Beatles were trying to play,
Looking
the lads
nice
next door.
Yeah, nice and prim and proper.
Whereas the Rolling Stones, I think, you know, even from that first album cover, were trying to get across an attitude.
Yeah, yeah. They're trying to get something across there, but they got a bit of a rot up them at this stage.
But you look at some of the blues albums of that time, you know, the English blues, like John Mayall's Blues Breakers, one. The album they call Beano. There's got the four of them just sitting kind of almost in the gutter or on a bench. And Eric Clapton's famously reading Beano magazine, which is a comic book of those days. And they're kind of dressed in, you know, bluesy kind of jeans, I think, and, you know, check shirt. I don't know if any, I can't recall if any of them had a tie on or anything. But, but yeah, they were dressed like they'd just come out from playing a smoky bar somewhere or waiting to play a smoky bar.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough.
I mean, whereas, you know, groups like The Who, The Hermits, you know, most of those early mid-60s, Manfred Mann, their album covers generally showed them in tailored suits.
Got to portray yourself in a certain way. Kind of reminds me of the Live Yardbirds or something, the Five Live Yardbirds.
Yeah,
which is weird because they've got that fence in front of them, but they're all dressed in suits. It's in the back of an alleyway or something. But that was the style back in the early 60s. Yeah. That was it. You were all up there dressed up in suits.
Well, you probably had to wear a tie to go most places, even when they were playing.
Very true. I mean, what, this is talking about the Marquee, I think, the famous club down that way.
Men had to wear a tie to get in, you know. I mean, and I'm old enough to remember that in clubs. And, you know, here, you have to, after 6 o'clock or even during the day, you know, you front up to go to a club and they say, where's your tie? I haven't got one. So they'd give you a tie out of a bin they kept beside the front desk. And it could be a bright green tie to go with your denim shirt.
Jeez, that's a good one, huh?
But you had to go off and put the tie on.
The old tie bin. I think Michael Hutchins really loved it.
Oh,
no. But yeah, like it's... Well, you talk about it as well when you go to the concerts and you're looking at live footage from back then. They're all sitting there.
Yes.
Great show, lads. Yes.
Yeah, they're much more... it was the late 60s they started letting their hair down, literally.
It's just on the verge of, like, you can see the scene is changing. We're not sure what is going to happen, but something is happening.
I would say, I'm not a fashion expert by any means, but I would say the American influence, you know, that really brought in that much more relaxed Californian style, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair enough to say as well. There was a bit of a, something's going down in the scene. And we apologize for the nature sounds in the background. That is a very loud bird, and... looks manager. Like Chowder's about to get out, actually.
Ooh,
our manager is eagerly watching over the show, just making sure that we're doing all right there, and, you know, and slowly clawing
learning
at it.
How to open the back door.
One the things that cats can do without opposable thumbs, everyone. Haven't you seen cats and dogs before? Just saying. But enough ramblings about nothing.
Amazing. I mean, last week she surprised us by doing that trigonometry, and now she's got the back door.
She came up with the whole table and the whole thing. That's Chowder's work right there. So, okay, look, a brief history, of course. The scene is changing. The Rolling Stones are here. The Beatles have been really cutting their teeth. Actually, to Rolling Stones too. They've been around technically for 2 years at this stage. Yeah. Touring clubs. They released an EP. But this is their first album. The Beatles, though, they had done the groundwork a few years before.
Yeah.
So the Rolling Stones aren't really exactly, I guess, making anything that's new, cutting edge, or all in regards to that. And in particular, when it comes to this album, it's all covers except for one track. You know, it's all just cover tracks of various blues, mostly
standard
blues.
Covers. Really, that's the note that I put. You know, like if you look at songs, material like "Not Fade Away," Buddy Holly.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of people did that, not Fade Away. I mean, it's been done over and over and over again. I don't know whether Rolling Stones was one of the first to do a cover. Route 66, you know,
yeah,
I Just Want to Make Love to You.
Yeah, a whole bunch of these ones here.
Willie
the
Dixon
of it.
Song. Yeah. I think as far as original, there, that's the first Jagger Richards, which is Tell Me.
Tell Me was
a song written very much in the vein of the covers that they've been doing.
Mm.
But I think two other pieces there are also by the band, because I believe Nanka Felge, given as a songwriter for two of the tracks, was a name, a false name for the whole band.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I don't believe there is actually such a person as Nanka Felge.
Or if there is, that'd be an unfortunate name.
Yeah, that name appears on some of the other albums as well, and that's supposedly where the five Rolling Stones members. And interestingly, on this album and another one of the ones we're looking at, the Nanka Felge track is an instrumental.
Oh, okay.
So on this particular album, Now I've Got a Witness is instrumental.
Yeah.
And
are you sure? Now I've Got a Witness?
Yeah.
I thought there was the lyrics, Now I've Got a Witness throughout it.
Well, I just listened to it again. I did turn it off and there's about 30 seconds left to go, so maybe there is something said at the end, but...
Yeah, right.
Little by Little, it's another song with Nanka Felge, but also co-written with Phil Spector.
Yeah, that's the other
thing.
He was
in the studio with them a bit and played some piano along with Ian Stewart.
I remember looking that up and I'm like, oh, Phil Spector is on there. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
yeah, very controversial figure when it comes to producers.
Well, a later controversial, yeah.
Later. Well, yeah, the guy was an oddball.
He was.
Very lightly.
Yeah.
And the other thing as well, I guess we have to mention here, because when it comes to the Rolling Stones, everyone knows it's like the five members, you know, obviously... I'm talking about the main members, of course, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, Charlie Watts, Bill Wyman, and Brian Jones. Yes. And there is, everyone knows about the Fab, I guess you wouldn't say the Fab Five, it was the Fab Four for the Beatles, but, you know, the five members of the Rolling Stones. But there was actually a sixth member, Ian Stewart, who was cut just before this album. But he was a session recorder for keyboards and,
all of his work.
Yeah,
life,
up until
really,
about
with,
85, I think,
yeah,
when he passed away.
He passed away, and they actually, the album that came out then,
Dirty Works,
finishes off with a little piano ditty from Ian Stewart.
And even he was, I think, when the Rolling Stones were included in the, what do you call it, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they included Ian Stewart.
I think he was cut in part because they considered he didn't look the part.
Yeah, that's an odd statement. I get where they're coming from when you're looking at the album cover and it's just all the bowl haircuts. And then imagine, like, what's Ian Stewart done that he's not got the bowl haircut?
I don't know.
Suit and tie.
Taller as well, but skinnier looking. And, you know,
I mean, Charlie's a tall guy as
Charlie,
well.
Yeah, pretty tall guy, yeah.
But interesting, he was cut before, obviously. the Rolling Stones would take their minds and drag that one up. But yeah, okay, so it's interesting to note about that, because obviously the Glimmer Twins, as they would know, be known years later, it sounds like they started off with a bit of, you know, pseudonyms for recording and stuff like that, because I did think this was all covers. You know, it mostly is. It really mostly is when you're looking over this.
Yeah.
What are your favourite tracks?
Well, actually, I don't mind the Tell Me song, the first Jagger Richards. So, and of course, it's also happens to be the longest track, just over 4 minutes, because all these four albums comply with the top 40 kind of view at the time, where your tracks had to be, you know, 2 to 3 minutes if you wanted to get radio play. In fact, some of them are less than 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, each side was only usually 15, 20 minutes at the most.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's why when you see rehashed or, you know, versions on digital or on CD, as they, when they came out, they would often have another half an album added to it. Now they'd have out tracks or live tracks or whatever.
Yeah, they've got to fill the space somehow.
Because even on vinyl, you can fit more than 15 minutes to a side. I'm not sure what the maximum might be, 25, 30 minutes.
But depends on which vinyl, yeah. But about 23, 22 and a half minutes, I think it is.
And they rehashed as well, because you see tracks turning up several of the albums. And
or in this instance, US releases and stuff like that, which we get to.
Of course, in those days, the albums were released in a country at a particular point in time, and it wasn't easy to get hold of tracks from or albums from overseas. So they'd be released in the UK under the Decca label. London label was in the US, I think, which was owned by Decca.
Okay.
The Rolling Stones were signed with Decca until the end of the 70s, till the end of the 60s, I think.
Okay.
And so they would release a US version sometimes several months after the UK version. So they sometimes also know, it was almost like a marketing ploy. In marketing, you quite often might release something in a smaller market, not the UK's that small, but to see how it goes, and then modify it. In this case, they changed some of the stuff and put some different tracks on and omitted tracks.
Yeah. I mean, that's very true. It did come up a bit later on, and obviously we go through that with a few of the future albums that'll be coming up. But yeah, you're right about that. I mean, I remember you were telling me, there were like the US release and then, country releases. And didn't you say that's how that Mick Jagger and Keith Richards first met or something? He was carrying like a bunch of records?
Yeah, I think the fable, the theory or the it's was that Keith Richards was carrying a bunch of records which he'd got from the US imports. Yeah, he had to buy imports. So he would actually get them from a record store in the US and send them over. Chess Records, probably quite often, which was the big company in Chicago. I mean, one of their instrumental tracks on another album by Nanka Felge is the actual street address of Chess Records.
2120.
Manhattan.
Chicago, I think. Whatever it was.
Yeah. And it's a bit strange, but and you can see that influence on these albums because they've got Muddy Waters and other people, blues artists.
US ones, isn't it? Blues artists that they're covering, not really
there
the
wasn't
English
really
side.
Much way blues.
Well, that's true.
Anywhere else when blues and jazz emanated from largely the African American musicians in the US in the 50s and well, the jazz longer, but the Jagger Richards was supposed to be carrying a bunch of these, half a dozen records he just picked up from a record. Import store, and Richard Jagger saw him, and they started chatting. I think they might have known each other by then, but they weren't really friends, and discovered they both had a real passion.
Blues
music.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story if true. I hope so. Yeah. it'd be interesting to see. Like, oh yeah, how did you bond? Oh yeah, with records. That just sounds better. It sounds much better than we just got pushed in a studio.
A mate introduced me.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. As far as my best songs go, I put down Route 66.
Yeah.
I thought that was
a good version.
Good version of that one. And Carol.
Yeah, well, Carol, of course, was a good song, a Chuck Berry song, which they did quite a few Chuck Berry songs.
Mm.
And they continued. I mean, a live version of that, a really good live version, that appears on Get Your Yah Yahs Out.
Well, they worked with Chuck Berry later on.
Yes, yeah, they did. Yeah. And with Muddy Waters.
Yeah, that's true.
They did a concert with Muddy Waters. I mean, some of these blues artists were thankful in a way that bands like the Rolling Stones were using their material because it brought them to the public scrutiny once again.
It's a good point.
Because you got to think, people like Muddy Waters by the 60s, I don't know what age he was, but he was probably 40s, 50s. He'd kind of had a long career in music and written a lot of material and recorded, a lot of albums. And perhaps that style of music was dying out a bit as pop music was taking over.
Well, more like jazz. As soon as jazz took over, blues ain't going to last,
And,
the zeitgeist has shifted.
Yeah, the British took the American blues music, kind of polished it up a little bit to suit their own audience and so on, and once again made it popular because, I mean, people like myself, I would look at albums and see the name Muddy Waters, and whilst I might have heard of him, and some of the late night radio stations might play, Room to Move on the ABC used to play a lot of blues stuff, you'd then dig out a Muddy Waters album and buy it or listen to it.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it, I guess. Like, I could say the same thing about Metallica with Garage Inc., you know, and the fact that they covered bands like Black Sabbath, which, of course, we went down that path of, oh, we'll go listen to Diamond Head and Black Sabbath and all that. So, yeah, that's a pretty interesting correlation in regards to that one. Worst tracks? Is there anything that you just didn't really like from this album?
Yeah, I'm a King Bee. Their version of that, I thought, sounded like a send-up.
Okay.
It's just a young Jagger trying to put on this pouty kind of, oh, I'm a King Bee. You know, like, just, I don't know, just fell flat.
Yeah, that song sucked.
Listening to it, it sounds like, I mean, you can see what he's trying to do and where he's trying to position himself, and you can see the future Jagger, I suppose, and some of that, but it just falls flat to me. It's just embarrassing almost.
Plus the irony of, there is no such thing as a King Bee, but I'm not going to really divulge into that too much. But yeah, listen, lyrics, I can be your King Bee, you can be my Queen Bee. And I'm like, there are no King Bees. What are you? Anyway, that's a cover. I don't have to look into it too far.
The Jimmy Reed song, Honest I Do, that wasn't a bad version, but you know, they later did an album with Jimmy Reed, or did some work with Jimmy Reed, not the Rolling Stones, probably Jagger, Richards, Jimmy Reed's. Probably a posthumous album, I think. Blues, Blues, Blues.
Okay.
Which had featured a whole lot of people like Clapton and other artists as well.
All of them were in that scene.
Or doing songs with Jimmy Reed.
Yeah, okay. For me, I thought Now I've Got a Witness is actually one of the least powerful songs on this album. I didn't like it. Just felt a bit weak. Same with King Bee as well. I didn't like that song to begin with. But, it wasn't a great tune, I guess. But other than that, it's a decent enough album. So where would it sit in the rating on the table for you?
Look, it's hard to rate looking back over such a long time ago. I mean, I'm a big Rolling Stones fan, but I didn't come to them until the very late 60s, early 70s, get your yah-yahs out, sticky fingers kind of time. So I never bought these albums new. And in those days, unless someone had the album or you heard it in a record store, you didn't listen to it, you know. I mean, they might have played some of the tracks, and certainly tracks like Carol and Not Fate, and and others.
Yeah, Route 66, Route 66 I think. Sorry, which is on Get Your Yah-Yahs Out as well, I believe, both those tracks. Well, Carol was,
yeah. I'm not sure about Route 66.
Probably on one of them live albums, or compilation ones that you were talking about later on.
Yeah. So, yeah, I heard a lot of the stuff on compilation album, best of kind of thing, but not really listened to those albums all the way through. So I'm judging it from the point of view of, it's like trying to judge someone's standards by today's standards, 50, 60,
60, years.
60 years ago.
Well, 60 years next year, yeah.
But look, I think Bell Pepper at best, just because it's just a bunch of short, radio-friendly tracks.
Yeah,
I don't think it particularly stands out. It's not a bad album. If I bought it, you'd be happy to play it a few times.
Sure. Yeah, okay. It's interesting that it sat in that position for you. For me, I find it an interesting album, I guess. I was reading a lot into it, and a fair few music journos in particular, they highly regard this album for whatever reason. But, there was... forgot who it was, but they rated it in their top 1,000 albums of all times and blah 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 blah, and I'm looking at it going, if this Rolling Stones Records is in your top 1,000s, then where does the rest of them sit? Because this is a very, very different Rolling Stones compared to what the Rolling Stones would be. This is Rolling Stones as a boy band. They've been pushed and shoved and told what to do by the record company. But it's still not a bad effort, Usually the first efforts, they're pretty on the mark for capturing that energy. And I think the Rolling Stones definitely were on the mark where they were at that time of their career. With that said, it's not a bad album. It's certainly not going to sit up as high as many others, but I thought it was fairly endearing in parts. I gave it a Tabasco sauce, to be honest. I actually liked it.
Well, I think if you were judging it by, as I said, I'm judging it by today's standards. Here we are, 2023, Hackney Diamonds has just come out, their 31st or 32nd, so there's a lot
between
what's happened since then. But I think if we were back in 1964 and looking at the other albums that had come out that year, this would be a standout.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point.
This would be a lot better than some of the
trash. The dribble that came out around that time. Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
But you've got to keep in mind, was it 1964? So they were the very first The Who album, which, well, I thought it would shit on this.
Yeah.
let's not even get into the Beatles, but.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's not a terrible one. It's the Rolling Stones have a very interesting career, and this is the reason why we, you know, compiled their first four albums into one episode, because, you know, it's prim and proper shit. It's prim and proper what the record exec tells you to do, and this is before the Rolling Stones.
And it's probably a lot of the material that they were playing at nightclubs and places that they were performing.
Yeah, that's it.
They didn't have a whole bunch of their own songs.
No.
And of course, for many bands, you know, trying to make it, the signal to the audience to take a bathroom break is when they say, well, we want to do one of our own songs. Oh, God.
Yeah, that's fair.
Let's go and sit down. Let's go and get a drink.
No, yeah, that's a fair point like that. But, yeah, you're true in saying that. Like, you know, you would begin off as a covers band and just to get the chance to record.
And bands in those days were largely doing songs by other people.
Yes, yeah, they were.
Singer-songwriter, you know, which I think the Beatles can justifiably take a lot of the credit for. They didn't entirely do that. The Rolling Stones themselves, of course, proved that to be quite successful. But if you look at the first albums of many bands, I mean, Cream's album a couple of years later, 1966 or whatever, you know, there was a lot of largely covers.
Yeah, that's true.
They did a version of Susie Q on one of their albums. Well, even Creedence did Susie Q on their first album.
And, yeah.
Other such songs. So they were doing a bunch of standards and songs that were around, popular in those times.
No, that's true. That's a fair point. And even up until Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, well, of course, Led Zeppelin used to put their own names onto the songs.
Yes,
they did other people's songs, but they didn't get
it. They reworked it.
Until they took them to court.
Yep. We're going to use Chicago.
Was based on You Need Love. And
That's right. You can do a whole episode on that one.
Babe, I'm going to leave you and all that kind of stuff. It was an album. I mean, as I said, based on, if you judged it on the albums that came out in 1964, and I wasn't buying records then, so I don't really know.
Yeah,
I'm sure that stacked up pretty well. And even what came out later, because you got to remember later that decade, you know, we had the era of boys bands, the Monkees, and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I quite like the Monkees; it probably brought me the music in some respects. You know, you had other bands like, as I've mentioned, Herman's Hermits a few times, and of course, bubblegum music came out. You know,
That was just around was just the verge. Just a factory there.
Pushing out, stuff. 1910 Fruit Gum Company and all this kind of cartoon bands like the Archies.
Cookie cutter shit just being pushed out constantly.
The Brill Factory, what they call it. I mean, Holland Dozier Holland, one of the songs I think on that on this album is a Holland Dozier Holland. Well, they were a trio that, you know, wrote a lot of that. I think they were part of what they call the Brill Machine, the Brill thing, the Brill Building in New York, whatever. They were just people like Carole King and Jerry Goffin and all that used to clock in every day and sit and write songs for other people to record.
Fair enough. Well, that's one way to make a living, I guess.
Yeah.
But we move on to the next Rolling Stones album, which is 12 by 5. Now, the reason I've included this US release is because technically, it does stand out a little bit more to the rest of the US releases because it includes the 5x5 EP that the band would release earlier on in that year. Later on, I should say, in 1964. And various other live tracks or some other tracks amongst the mix there that really aren't. I mean, there's a few tracks, obviously, from, you know, UK releases stuff, but there's a lot that's just pretty original. So in that instance, I've said, all right, let's talk about 12x5, you know, briefly. And mention what we were going to find about this. So I just want to talk to you. The album cover, what do you think about this one?
Similar.
Very similar to the first one.
They're just facing a different direction. Jagger's got his jacket off this time.
Actually, I think because you were talking about the album cover of that last one, I'm pretty sure 12x5 was from the same photo shoot. The exact same photo shoot.
I didn't examine in detail their haircuts and all that kind of stuff, but it looks for the Yeah. Very much. As I said, they're saying, okay, Mick, you take your tie and jacket off this time.
Actually, no. Yeah, I think so. Or it's Rolling Stones number two. I think it's Rolling Stones number two. They take that photo. Anyway, it's used in some other thing. Yeah. But 12x5, what did you... I guess I don't have any stories regarding this one other than what I just said. You know, it's a US release, which includes 5x5. So I guess we'll dive straight into this and just say, what do you reckon about the music on offer here?
Look, it's more of the same... similar. It's got some good tracks on it. They do good versions of "Time Is on My Side" and "Under the Boardwalk," which almost come to be thought of as Rolling Stones songs. I thought, but they're not.
It's interesting. Okay, yeah.
I think they do "It's All Over Now," don't they? Or not? Yep.
Now,
Bobby Womack, Shirley Womack. "It's All Over Now" was done by many bands as well. That became a standard. Even Rod Stewart did it on one of his first solo albums.
Okay.
And used to do it live with the Faces.
Yeah, fair enough then.
It features some Nanka Felge again.
Rearing their head again. Yep.
2120 South Michigan Avenue.
There we go. Yeah.
Which is the address, I believe, for the Chess Records.
The old Chess Records.
Empty Heart, which is another one. There's a couple of Jagger Richards. Three Jagger Richards. So we're starting to see...
Yeah, we're starting to see them starting to increase their portfolio.
Yeah. Even though some of their own songs I don't think are particularly strong. I think Grown Up Wrong is not a great song.
Yeah, that's a fair one.
To me, the standout track, the one I really liked in this one, which also appeared on the 5x5 EP, is "If You Need Me" by Wilson Pickett.
Okay.
And Robert Bateman.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, Susie Q, I mean, that's a less than 2 minute song.
Yeah, it's a short track. I think it's the very last one, I think, from that album. Yeah,
and that appears on the next album.
On the next one as well, so, the UK release. So.
And like I was saying before, you did have the US and the UK release, and it was not possible to go into a record store and compare the two albums because you had to be in the US to buy the US version, and it's a bit like DVDs and regions almost.
Yeah, that's true. That's true to agree.
They shuffle the songs for the different versions.
Yeah, they mix and mash them all. Mm. That's where 12x5 is kind of like this weird oddball in regards to the US versus UK releases. Yeah. Where the albums would be like, all right, we've cut two tracks off. This whole album's like, all right, we've got five or six tracks out of 12 that are just not on any albums. Then there's a couple that'll be appearing later on. You know, for me, the best songs was "Confessing the Blues," "Good Times, Bad Times," which I had to double check wasn't actually an original by Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin, no.
Yeah, I'm listening to it and going, "Oh, Good Times, Bad Times." Hang on a second, is there some kind of link here I'm not familiar with? And that would have been a really cool link if true. And "It's All Over Now."
Hmm.
You know, for me though, when it comes to the worst tracks, which it's interesting you mentioned those ones before, but "Under the Boardwalk," I thought was so boring, and
that song had been done well before.
And the other one was "Time Is on My Side," which I didn't like. I just, from what I read as well, actually, "Time Is on My Side" is pretty much a blatant rip-off copy of it, of the original.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think most of that stuff,
even trying to be their own.
There was a compilation album out some years later called "Time Is on My Side."
Okay,
the Rolling Stones.
Oh yeah. There was.
I think they might have called it. Maybe they was it titled "Metamorphosis" in some place. I'm not sure.
Yeah, or was it "Aftermath"? You're not talking about "Aftermath" or whatever. "December's Children."
No, different one. It was a compilation.
Okay, but anyway, any tracks you thought that I guess didn't really stand out?
Didn't.
Mm.
Oh, look, I would wonder why you'd include a 1.5 minute version of "Susie Q." I'm sure they could just play a couple more rounds. You know, like why bother?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, you know, it's an interesting point to make. They got around something
it's
now.
It's got an instrumental again by the band. Okay. 2120 South Michigan.
Yeah.
Which I thought was good. "Time Is on My Side," "Under the Boardwalk," one, "It's All Over Now." Well, they almost came to be thought of as Rolling Stones original by many, I think. But
that's what I heard about them too, about those tracks. And I guess maybe this reflects upon you, but you're growing up with this music, you recognize this music and stuff like that. I don't. I know of these songs. I don't know these songs more inherently like you would. So for you, this is like, all right, this is a band that's covering songs that I'm familiar with, songs from my childhood, and, you know, there's probably that nostalgia factor as well in regards to looking
at that. Yeah, we used to hear them on the radio because they were 3-minute songs, you know?
Yeah, Songs from the Boy. I mean, sorry, Under the Boardwalk in particular. Boardwalk. That was a big song.
I think it was that the Drifters or something?
Yeah, the Drifters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So listening to the original, and it's kind of like, oh, you can see the difference. Actually, the Drifters, holy crap, what a band with an amount of lineup changes.
Oh, yeah, I know. That.
Wow.
I think they're still, I think there they're two still around. Circulating, and
I think they had three or four. I think there's any bands.
Original members left.
Yeah, I think they had three or four bands at one stage.
Like Sweat and Tears these days. I mean, they were still touring, but there's not an original member left.
I quickly checked on them, and it said that there was about 70 lineup changes. Yeah, and I'm like, yeah. What? No.
That's right. When does a band become a cover band for itself? That's it.
Even a lot of the original members had died off by about 1972. And I'm thinking, this band's only been around since 57. Anyway, I'm getting, I guess, sidetracked on that one.
I guess the London Symphony Orchestra from 1920s and now is different.
That's true. That's very true. Might be picking up a little bit of wind interference now. We're getting a bit of storm
coming in.
Yeah, anyway. Time is not on our side when it comes to this one. Now, I don't know if the wind is going to pick up some levels here at the moment, so we'll try and rush through this very quickly, but rating on the scale.
Bell pepper again.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah, I could agree. I would agree with you there.
I think the first album was stronger than this, but I'd probably rate them both as a bell pepper. Again, that's going back and using, you know, putting today's standards perhaps against.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a very fair point. I thought that, like you said, the first album was much more stronger.
Yeah, the first album was.
So I did reflect it a bit, I guess. I put it as bell pepper for this album.
Even though I like the fact that there were more Jagger Richards, you know, they were starting to stretch their writing.
Yeah,
it's interesting that it was Jagger Richards, and there's some Lagerfeld, so the whole band Lagerfeld was credited. Because at that stage, 64, 65, I think Brian Jones was considered to be the leader of the band. It was his band. And Jagger Richards were not, you know, they were not as in control as they, you know,
as they would become.
Mick Jagger was considered to be the CEO of Rolling Stones Inc. now.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
But Brian Jones was the
A bit of a,
he was a multi-instrumentalist.
Yeah, he was a weapon of choice there, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, but of course, you know, as we know,
that would
he
be
wrote
very
himself
different.
Out of right, the
yeah.
band, wrote put, himself, put himself, and wrote
yeah,
himself
put,
out.
Yeah, put himself in a forever sleep and never enjoyed the successes of what the band would become.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I mean, I'm looking at this going, all right, it's an okay album. It's certainly not the worst stuff they've put out. There's definitely a lot better. So I couldn't put it any lower than Bell Pepper. I kind of feel like when they looked at this 12x5 record, or at least the 5x5 release, they might have been plucking summer hits out of the charts and going, all right, lads, you do a cover of this one, you do a cover of this one. Even I think the production level between two of the songs, and this would be reflective of the EP probably mixing in with the actual recording, but I think there was like a track or two that came... I think it's like the second or the third track, and you can hear the audio quality difference.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's one of them was 5x5, and the other one was cutting into the new record.
Yeah,
yeah. And you can really notice it, which just bothers me.
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean when you're trying to compare albums across decades, because we're comparing it now with the modern recording methods and, you know, multi-track digital. You know, it's like when you go back and listen to Robert Johnson, who recorded most of his stuff before he did, sitting in a room playing guitar or singing into a microphone that was sitting on a soapbox.
Yeah, but there's something endearing about that. Yeah. That's lo-fi kind of quality, and lo-fi is almost its own thing. When you're looking at a band that, like the Rolling Stones, you know, and you're getting this level of production kind of imperfection, you're going, okay, that's a rush job to get it out there in time for Christmas.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I'm pretty sure this was out around about the November era,
12x5. Yeah.
So, yeah, the second album from the band, or technically not, I think it's the second one for the US release anyway, just a compilation of mix in there. So, yeah, an interesting piece at the end of the day for that one. So I think this episode has gone a bit longer than we really anticipated. But that's not a bad thing. That means that there are going to be more episodes when it comes to the Rolling Stones. So increase the numbers. But next episode we'll be talking about 1965. We're going to be talking about the Rolling Stones, number 2, and Out of Our Heads, of course, both of these records. Very interesting times for the band, especially in regards to some of the UK releases, the US releases that they would do. So we will not talk about the US releases, but we will mention them because they're very important, in particular, one of those albums.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting episode. If you've liked this episode, make sure to do the social, smash like and all the rest of it, and do all those wonderful things that makes my channel grow. And as always, thank you, Wazza, for coming along for this very special episode.
Look forward to the next session and the sessions after that.
The many, 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 many sessions more to come. Rolling Stones, talking about the band for as long as they've been around. More and more.
Had a cover 60 years in 30 episodes.
Yeah, 60 years in 30 episodes or less, or your money back guaranteed. All right, people, you have a great day. Make sure you stay spicy out there, everyone. Take it easy.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this content, make sure to smash that like button, subscribe to us, and stay notified for future music-related content, because it keeps our manager happy at the end of the day. We are also on Discord, Instagram, Facebook, and all those other social platforms if you want to check us out. As always, people, you have a great day, and stay spicy.